For the new superintendent.
Oh, yes, you did, that's right.
I don't know if anyone volunteered a number or not. Did anyone volunteer a number for that question about how many charter schools will have in 5 years?
I never did.
No, I never got asked. Hence who the new superintendent is.
Okay, well, how about we get started, and I want to start at the end. As you leave this evening, no matter if you leave in the middle or at the very end, please grab some candy. That's candy for you guys, the people at this meeting, in the spirit of the holidays. And I'd let you bring it in, except if anyone got chocolate on anything, I'd be in trouble. How about this? Hi.
Welcome.
You got here early.
We're really just getting started.
All right. It must be the wrong day, so we went home and came back.
Oh, no, you were here. There is literature from a couple of our guests at the center of each table for you to take and go over. In case anyone doesn't know me, I don't know if there is anyone here who doesn't. But my name is Lori Frost, and along with my husband, Jeff Hunters, who's on camera, we kind of oversee this district-wide group of parents and teachers and kids and anyone interested in appropriately challenging our most academically talented students. A group called Madison United for Academic Excellence. We've been doing this for a number of years. I forget how many. Tonight we're finally doing something we've talked about doing for a while, actually. It was probably a couple of years ago when someone first said, why don't we invite the folks from Appleton? And as these things happen or don't happen, it hasn't happened until this year, but it's very well timed because there's a lot of conversation about charter schools going on in Madison right now. Where it will go to, who knows at this point. It's very early on in that conversation. But there couldn't be a better time, I think, to have you for a first visit. Although we've been invited to visit, or it's been suggested that those of us who are interested go up to Appleton and really see firsthand what they're doing up there. So who are these people? It's my distinct pleasure to introduce Paula Sween and Dory Witzeling from the Odyssey Magellan program up in Appleton. From all of my emails, you already know this, but I'll say it again out loud. Paula was one of the founders of the program, and she is currently, you oversee curriculum for the
right, I oversee the talented gifted programming for the school district.
For the whole district.
Right, and my part of Odyssey Magellan at this point is the curriculum and then student enrollment recruitment.
Okay. And Dory is a third, fourth grade science teacher.
And math, yeah.
And math teacher at the school. How many years have you been there?
This is my third year doing that.
Okay. And she, her daughters have gone through the program. One is finished, mm-hmm. and one is currently in the program. And I learned at dinner that Dory grew up in Madison. she went to, you must have gone to West High School then. Oh,
no,
you
I went to Edgewood.
Even back then. Do you know, Edgewood High School has a waiting list.
Yeah,
I think for the first time ever.
Wow.
Two other guests with us tonight. Dory and Paul will be doing a presentation about the Odyssey Magellan program, its history, how it works, everything you ever wanted to know about a charter school for gifted kids in grades 3-8. And we have two other resource people here. Sam Brown, at the table, is, I guess I should say, one of the founders and the recently retired executive director of the Wisconsin Charter Schools Association. He knows everything and more about charter schools in Wisconsin and beyond. And some of it's in here. This is a resource that might be useful to anyone here tonight who would like to carry his ideas forward for Madison. And our other guest is Nancy Donovan, who was instrumental in the efforts to start charter school here in town last year, the Studio School, some of you may remember. And she's now pretty involved in this organization called HOPE, Having Options for Public Education. I guess, are you officially one of the conveners or not officially?
I think so, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, right. That's a
conveners,
good word.
Conveners, that's a good word.
Yeah.
Convener.
And so I know that Nancy was at the school board's performance and achievement committee meeting a week ago tonight, and a little bit later will share with us some of the things that were discussed at that meeting, because the agenda included the beginning of a conversation about charters, magnets, and other models and options for the Madison schools of the future. Okay, I'm going to turn the program over to Paula and Dory, and give them a chance to talk with us about what they're doing up in Appleton. And then we'll open it up for questions of any of the four guests that we have today.
Okay, and I said to Dory that I would go first. I can give you a timeline and a history and describe the curriculum, and then she can tell you what it's really like day to day to live within our Odyssey Magellan School. Like I said, I oversee K-12 gifted programming in Appleton. This is my 22nd year of being in that position. And I would have to say that the idea for a school for highly gifted kids first came up in 1989 when we were asked by the current superintendent to come up with a long-range plan for gifted programming. And at that point in time, we proposed such a school or program, but it really wasn't until 1996 that anything kind of happened. And what happened in 1996 is there was a general study of gifted programming within the Appleton School District, and a number of questions were asked. One of those questions that the Board of Education wanted us to address was, are the needs of highly gifted kids being met? The committee that specifically looked at that question back in 1996, interestingly enough, I did not serve on. It was felt that perhaps I would be biased and the results would be biased, and so a former principal and a parent led that study committee. And the net result of that committee was the answer to the question, are the needs of highly gifted kids being met in the district, was no, despite the best efforts of everybody involved, that because their academic needs were really so far different from the norm or the average, that their needs, in fact, couldn't be met. And so then after that, in April of 1998, another committee was convened. The parent who'd co-chaired the initial committee remained on, and I co-chaired that committee with them, and we looked at specifically what would the cost of developing such a, at this point we were calling it a school within a school, what would that be, and what would the program look like as we developed it. Between April of 1998 and September of 1999, when our school actually opened, the idea of applying for a charter school grant entered the picture. Our superintendent, Tom Scullin, was very supportive of charter schools. We have about 14 currently in Appleton. He looked at it as a way to get some interesting and novel and unique programs up and running, and so I was asked to apply for a charter grant, which I did. And so we got a planning grant and an implementation grant that at that point in time did get our school up and running. So in September of 1999, the year when the parent who kind of led the charge, his son for whom the school would have been perfect, his son entered college, so totally missed programming. But we started with 20 seventh grade students in our initial class. And the model the first year was that the students took their core academic classes, so their communication arts, science, social studies, math, and French, at the high school, West High School. Then at the end of that portion of their day, they also ate lunch there, they would walk down the street a block and a half to Wilson Middle School, where they then completed their Phi Ed and the music part of the day. And I would have to say that after the initial kind of shock of being seventh graders in a high school, they came to really love that model. The high school kids thought the freshmen were getting to look awfully young, given they were seventh graders, but that was the way the school looked the first year. The second year, when we, Renaissance High School, another charter school, moved into West High School, there was less space, and so at that point in time, Magellan was pulled back into Wilson Middle School, where it is currently. And I would have to say there are some of that initial class of kids that still to this day really regretted the fact that then they were kind of pulled back to a middle level. And when we moved back to the middle level, our model changed somewhat. We had high school teachers teaching each of the curricular areas at West High School. Those teachers did not choose to come with the program to the middle school. And so we hired two secondary certified teachers, both with dual certification, one to teach CA, or Communication Arts and Social Studies, the other to teach the math and science. And so that second year, we had a class of seventh graders and a class of eighth graders. I can tell you that in the first class of kids that went through, we did start with three girls. Two dropped out after the first year. So we had one brave girl who finished, you know, in that first two-year class. We had four girls in the second class, but by the third year, we were even in terms of numbers of boys and girls. That same, as we expanded to lower grades, that same balance, I think, we started with more boys than girls, but we're getting more balanced, both at fifth and sixth and at third and fourth. So we had 3 years of successful programming at Magellan, at which point we decided to expand the program down. Now, if you're looking at doing a charter school, my recommendation would not be to start at the middle school and move it down, because every time you add lower grade levels, you have to readjust the curriculum. So we, after 3 years, added grades 5 and 6, shifted the curriculum. 3 years later, we added grades 3 and 4, so the curriculum had to shift all the way up. The reason we started at middle level was because Dr. Scullin, quite frankly, was very interested in middle level programming. He said, you know, I could support a school for gifted middle school kids, and I'm politically savvy enough to say, great, I've always wanted to start at the middle level. But practically speaking, it would work more easily if you moved it up. So, after 3 years of programming at the middle level, we added grades 5 and 6. One of the main reasons was that we found that all of the kids who qualified for the school did not choose to come. And we thought that part of the issue was, as they're going off to middle school when the peer group is of primary importance, that if we ask kids to come at fifth grade, maybe that would be easier. In some ways it has been, in some ways it hasn't, but... So we added a 5th and 6th grade, which was housed at Foster Elementary School. And then based on positive input and evaluation, 3 years later we added the 3rd and 4th grade class, and that was at Huntley Elementary School. So we had two grades at one elementary school, two at another, and then our middle school program. But as of last year, grades 3 through 6 have been combined at Highlands Elementary School, which is actually the feeder school for Wilson Middle School, which is where the kids go. So if kids are making friends, Odyssey and Highlands kids make friends, then they go and they become Wilson and Magellan. So it's a nice flow for kids, and we've been real pleased with that. So, like I said, the one issue of developing down is the curriculum. So in terms of the design of the curriculum, what we've tried to do for the most part is use regular district curriculum, but we move at a faster pace and we go into greater depth and more complexity for the kids, because that's what they need. Now that said, there are some differences. For example, in communication arts, we don't use the regular reading series. Instead, we use the Junior Great Books program, which is a discussion, inquiry-based program, more like literary analysis, and the kids use that, and they write in response to the Junior Great Books. So we don't use district curriculum really there at all, other than we see that all the skills and things in the standards are covered. Social studies is we use the same general themes, but particularly with social studies, we're on a two-year rotation of curriculum. So for example, in Appleton, in seventh grade, the social studies curriculum is world geography, and in eighth grade, it's U.S. history. Our kids get those same topics, but they don't necessarily get them in those years. This year, all of the students at Magellan are getting world geography. It's taught more like a humanities kind of class because we really try to tie in a lot more things than just geography. And I'll be real frank and upfront and say that the main reason we did that was to save wear and tear on our teachers in terms of the number of preps that they would have. So again, it's a two-year rotation of curriculum. A couple of things that we have done, U.S. history in Appleton gets taught in fifth grade and eighth grade. What we've done is at the elementary level, they get U.S. history through the Civil War, and then in middle school, they get Reconstruction to the present. So we actually get to the present, you know, unlike, you know, a lot of times in U.S. history. But again, we use the same general themes. Math is accelerated. We do use the regular math program. Our goal for students, most, not all, is to be taking algebra by seventh grade. If kids take algebra in seventh grade, they can complete the district curriculum through AP Calculus by the end of their senior year. That said, we have a lot of kids in the program who are on a faster pace than that. We have some that aren't reaching algebra. In Appleton, the math curriculum is the area of the curriculum that is best developed in terms of a continuous progress for students. And so kids in all of our schools that need accelerated math get it. And so we're not that different. But like I say, we do aim for as much as possible kids to be in algebra at seventh grade. Science is, we use individually developed science lessons, and we use the new science adoption, which is a FOSS, which is a very hands-on lab-based science. Our kids, our third and fourth graders, don't just use third and fourth grade FOSS, though we have fifth and sixth grade units that can be used, and our fifth and sixth graders use middle school units. With the science, when we were grades 5 through 8, the teachers took what would be needed to complete the 7th, 8th, and 9th grade curriculum of life, earth, and physical science, and made sure that the curriculum was laid out so that the students, again, would be accelerated. So going into high school, kids usually take a class called biophysical science, which is a compacted physical science and biology. Or if they're math, if they're way ahead in math, we've had some kids start chemistry as freshmen. So again, it's accelerated, but as well, we're going into greater depth in terms of the topic. The other thing that we do is we offer a foreign language daily, starting at elementary school. We chose French. The question is always, why did you choose French? The original committee had the choice of offering kids a choice of languages, which in Appleton is the typical French, German, or Spanish, at the regular pace, or to choose one language and teach it at an accelerated pace. And we chose one language. We chose French. It was availability of teachers. It was difficulty of the language. It was a wide variety of things. But our kids now, starting French in third grade, our kids beginning next year will be going into French 4 at the high school as the typical one. They then have time during high school to add on a second language if they want to really quite easily. Math, physical education, and art.
Music.
What did I say? Not math. Okay. Music, art, and physical education at the elementary level are taught by the elementary specialists at the host site and our typical grade level curriculum. At the middle level, our kids do not get art, tech ed, and family and consumer education. That used to in Appleton be 12 weeks of each. It's changed slightly now, but in order to ensure that we had two full-time teachers, we had to give up the family, consumer ed, art, and technical education. So instead, we have an extra class period of the day that we call flex, and the Magellan teachers teach that to the students. At the elementary level, the biggest thing that we had to give up to get their French was developmental guidance. And so Dory can speak to this pretty eloquently. The teachers have developed a guidance curriculum that the kids get. But again, it's not taught by the guidance counselor. In terms of identification, to be identified for Odyssey Magellan, you have to be identified as highly gifted in general intellectual ability or gifted in general intellectual ability and highly gifted in an academic area. The white packet that was on the tables, this is our actual charter document with the Appleton Area School District, and it's on page 2 towards the bottom. It gives you a list of ways that kids can be identified as highly gifted. We use a variety of testing options. When we first started, we went with, because we were doing middle school, we used the Midwest Academic Talent Search model of doing out-of-grade level testing. Kids were given the Explore test, and we took kids in what they call service category 3, or kids who need radical acceleration. As we've moved down, we now still use the Explore test, but we also have put greater emphasis on the MAP, or Measures of Academic Progress test, because it's a test given to all students in our district, grades 2 through 10, twice a year. But again, we're looking for a variety of ways to identify students. If a student qualifies as highly gifted in an academic area or generally speaking, then they can enroll in the school. All students who qualify do not choose to. Typically, when I ask parents about why not, it's usually social reasons. They would welcome the academic challenge, but for social reasons, the neighborhood school is a more comfortable fit for their child. But because, because it is a school for highly gifted kids, it's not open to students unless they apply. If we have, we typically run the same size classes as all other schools in the district, so about 25 kids to a class. If we were to get more than 25 kids, say next year for our third grade class, then decision on admission is decided by lottery. We throw everybody into a hat and we draw out. So everybody applying would have equal access to it. So we do equal access that way. We do have a governance structure. The yellow handout is actually something that our governance committee came up with, and the governance structure specifically is described on page 7 of the charter document. We call it an advisory group. It's made up mostly of parents, but we have teacher representatives, and then the building principal from Highlands Elementary and from Magellan Middle School, who are the oversee the day-to-day operating of the school, and myself serve on that committee as well. It it is a governance board. However, the day-to-day running of the school basically falls to those building principals, and we follow pretty much the same procedures as other Appleton area school districts. But if, for example, we're looking at curriculum changes, this committee enters into it. This committee has also been very active in fundraising, and that's been real helpful because we've been able to purchase a number of things for the school based on the efforts of the parents. So we're now, let's see, what year did we start? We're 8 years, eight or nine years into it. We've had really, I think, positive feedback from the parents and the kids who've been involved. Every year, well, not every year, but there are at times kids who opt out of the program. If they decide that it's not a fit for them, that those students can go back to their neighborhood school, but that doesn't happen to any great extent. Typically, when it does happen, again, what we're told is that it's the social comfort of being at the neighborhood school. New in our charter this year, because we had to renew our charter with the Board of Education, initially the decision was that kids would go back to their neighborhood high schools. And while that is mostly what will still happen, as of this year, kids will get to choose which high school that they go to, because they will have been with us usually from grades 3 through 8, and so they do not necessarily have an allegiance to any one school. So they get to choose without having to go through the open enrollment process. They just don't have to. I'm going to let Dory talk to you a little bit about what it's life is like in the real world with the kids, and then questions, I think, will be where you'll get the real information that we may have forgotten.
Okay. My name is Dory Witzling, and let me give you a little bit of background on myself. First of all, I was born in Appleton, but only lived there until I was 3. Then we moved to Madison, and I've lived in Madison, gone through the Madison Public Schools District through 8th grade, and then I went to Edgewood for high school. After college, I student taught at Cherokee Middle School, my old middle school, in my old 8th grade classroom. Not with my old 8th grade teacher. And then taught in Verona for 10 years. I taught middle school science, physical science, for 10 years. Took some time off because of my mom's health, and then we ended up moving to Appleton. When I was in Appleton, I got involved in teaching gifted physical science in the summers, mostly because I had a gifted daughter who wanted to take physical science in the summer, and there was nobody in the room who was willing to teach it, and I was in the back, kind of went, well, I could do that, so she could take it. And through that, ended up getting to know Paula well, and through my daughter. And then 2.5 years ago, became a teacher at the elementary level teaching math and science. They told me when they hired me that really what they were looking for was someone who had a strong science background. And one of the things I wanted to add to what you had to say about how our curriculum is organized is that I think in most elementary schools you teach reading and writing and math every day, and then the teachers normally alternate between like a social studies unit and a science unit. We don't do that in our program. We teach social studies and science pretty much every day. And so while most of the classrooms in the district would teach like maybe 3 boss units, this year I'm teaching 8 different science units. Okay, so I cover a lot more science in my program, our program as well. Something that we really like. The reason that I first got involved in Magellan is because I have 2 gifted daughters. My oldest daughter is 16. She went to school in Verona, and when we knew we were moving, she was in a multi-age program, which was phenomenal, and when we knew we were moving to Appleton, we didn't want her to have the possibility of having to retake something she had already had, because their curriculum also rotated. So, and suspecting that she was gifted, we had her tested and came to meet with, we didn't know for sure where we were going to move in the valley, but came to meet with Paula, because we were told that Appleton, I did some research online, found out that they had this charter school thing. And Paula looked at the numbers and went, oh yeah, she can come. She's in. And so she joined the program We went to a regular sixth grade class because she was accelerated 1 year at that point, and then she joined Magellan at the seventh grade level. So she was only in the program for the seventh and eighth grade years. She also then went to high school for 2 years and then was lucky enough to earn a scholarship to Simon's Rock, which is the only college in the country where they will take high school age students who are interested in starting their bachelor's early. So she is this year a sophomore at the age of 16, and she's an RA in Massachusetts. And we just went to see her last weekend, and it's a hard thing to be a parent and have your 16-year-old on the other side of the country, but it was the best place for her to do what's best for her kids. So I felt the reason that we chose Magellan for her, and she was very involved in that decision, being a very mature young kid, was because she had never socially found the right fit. When she, in her classroom, her teachers really meant well, but very frequently she ended up kind of having the role of being the teaching assistant, where she would be put in a group, and they knew she could handle running a group, so she kind of had to run the groups. And so when she would bring little friends home from school, the only thing she knew how to do with them was to teach them. And she didn't know how to just play kid on kid kind of thing. And that's what I wanted for her, was to be able to find a peer group where she could do that preteen giggly girl thing, you know, and just relax with people who she could relate to. And Magellan was perfect for that. And we of course loved the academic challenge, but that really was not a primary goal for us in the program. My younger daughter, who is now a seventh grader in Magellan, also went through the fifth and sixth grade Odyssey portion of the program. And she loves it, is doing very well. We're very happy with it. She's very different from my older daughter, lots of differences in personality and that kind of stuff, but it's been a really good fit for her as well. As a teacher, as I entered the program, I already had 11 years of experience teaching middle school kids. I also had like 3 or 4 years of experience teaching in the summers this gifted physical science class where we taught freshman physical science in 4 weeks. And the first year I did that with them, I thought, oh my gosh, how am I going to get through physical science in 4 weeks? And found out very quickly that I could have gotten it through in 3 weeks and they would have been just fine, you know. And so they were just amazing, these students. And so I found out that I really enjoyed working with gifted kids. It was a neat thing. Having two gifted daughters and those like 1 month experiences didn't completely prepare me for going in full time to a large class, vast majority of male students. Right now it's my third year and I have about 2/3 boys and 1/3 girls. I have a class of 22 in my fourth grade and 21 in my third grade class. But those numbers are building, so it's a good thing. We keep trying to recruit more girls. And the thing that I really loved my first year was how important spending time not just on the academics, but really spending time on the importance of social skills, teaching kids how to work together in groups, teaching kids who are used to being the star of the class, how to deal with the fact that you're like in a class now where everybody was the star of the class, teaching kids how to read social cues from other people, how to criticize an idea without insulting a person, how to, all of those kinds of skills that are kind of daily life skills that are really hard for students who have such asynchronous development, who are so intellectually above their peers, but emotionally they're still 8. You know, and so I became really committed to the idea that the thing I needed to learn myself was a lot more about guidance. So I found out about the organization called SANG, which is the Social and Emotional Needs of the Gifted, went to a conference there, did a lot of reading, and started asking everybody I could find, you know, anybody have an elementary guidance curriculum for gifted kids? Nobody had such a thing. So I started using a lot of the books that, like, Judy Galbraith wrote, a lot of these kinds of things to help work with my gifted students. And since doing that, I have really felt like the kids have learned, number one, to understand a lot more about how did they ever get to be identified as gifted? what does gifted mean? Because there are an awful lot of grown-ups that are not comfortable with talking about what gifted is. There are an awful lot of adults, you know, me included, who find socially it's difficult to talk about my daughter sometimes because it's hard to say, yeah, well, you know, my 16-year-old is a sophomore without sounding like I'm bragging or insulting somebody, you know, and I'm not. I'm telling them this is my life, you know, and this is her life. And so I really wanted to make sure that my students had a safe place to be able to talk about being gifted. So we spend our guidance time doing a lot of stuff that has to deal with understanding what giftedness is and what it is not. Okay, that doesn't make them a better person than somebody else. Understanding some of the strengths and weaknesses that many gifted people have. Understanding why a lot of gifted people can have a hard time holding a job when they're grown-ups. And what kind of things we need to work on and why social skills and a lot of these other things can be really important for us to spend time with. Talking about organization, which can be a really big problem for a lot of my gifted kids. Talking about friendships. There's a whole list. If you're interested in getting some more information about any of those topics, I would, and about the charter and the school itself, I'd really recommend that you spend a little time looking at our new website. So, and you can Google Odyssey Magellan, or you could Google Appleton Area School District, and it will be listed on the front webpage as Odyssey Magellan. And in there, there's the copy of the charter. There's also, I have a webpage, and that has a little explanation about what my guidance curriculum looks like, that kind of thing. But that's kind of the gist of where we're coming from and what we're trying to do there. So would you be ready to take questions?
Do you have plans of moving down to first and second grade?
It's a dream. I don't know at this point in time if we'll be able to do that. Identification becoming the biggest issue. I think we could identify second graders, but we don't identify very many kids at the kindergarten and first grade level. But yes, I would hope to.
We do have a tag pull-out program for younger kids. Paula teaches a first and second grade class.
At each of the schools?
No, it's a centralized program. They come to me for half a day a week. But.
And they bus them in for a half a day per week?
My daughter did that as well. My
Yes?
Do you track the kids that graduate from your program through high school?
Yes and no. Anecdotally, yes, because we hear back, you know, we hear back from kids, we hear back from parents. We can, you know, that initial class now, those kids are juniors in college, and so we, you know, we try to get, we don't have any statistics, as it were. It is interesting to me, after about the first 2 years, we did do a survey of high school teachers. That had Magellan kids in their class to say, you know, well, what have you discovered? You know, would you have liked more information? I did find it a little bit alarming that the majority of the teachers said, no, we didn't know they were, and it wouldn't have mattered anyway. They, you know, they fit in fine, you know, which is okay if they're an accelerated student in an accelerated class, but if they're a ninth grader sitting in ninth grade civics, I found that, you know, kind of alarming that they hadn't picked them out. But I can tell you that I think it was last year, our first group of ninth graders, we had a sizable number that took chemistry. And there was much fear and trepidation among the high school chemistry teachers as to how that was going to go. And for the most part, it was pretty successful because we recommended, I think, the appropriate students for chemistry, and then we told them very specifically that as pioneers, you know, they needed to make sure that if they were taking chemistry that they did well in chemistry, or future generations would, you know, would suffer the problem if it didn't go well. So we haven't kept at, you know, statistics, but we've tried to anecdotally follow the kids. And interestingly enough, a lot of times the kids, even if they end up at the three high schools, will, you know, have mini reunions or still get together with those close friends that they made.
Do the kids think that they integrated well into their choice of
yes,
school?
Yes,
so,
yes, typically.
They didn't feel like weird or anything.
The one problem that we have discovered with the kids going to three different high schools. What, I mean, the reason it was designed that way originally is so that there wouldn't be competition for the major scholarships, you know, from all of these kids. The downside is that because they're not going into typical ninth grade classes, they might be, as a ninth grader, taking a sophomore or a junior class and an advanced class, and we maybe only have one section of that at a high school, and given the fact that it's a junior level course, the schedule is made to fit more juniors, and so we've had some kids have to make some hard choices as to what classes to take. If they were all at one high school, it would be somewhat easier to do that scheduling, but that I don't, that would not occur unless kids all decided to go to one high school. So that's kind of the downside of them being spread out. But,
and I can say too that my daughter, my oldest daughter, who's gone through freshman and sophomore year, struggled a little bit because she was accelerated into even some junior classes when most of her Magellan buddies were in like some of the sophomore classes, and found it really frustrating to deal with how often during the year she had to say, you know, deal with, you're a freshman, what are you doing in here, that kind of a thing, and yes, I am a freshman, and yes, I know, and everyone was talking about getting their driver's license, and she's like, you know, they're like, when are you going to do that? She's like, I'm 14, I'm not doing it for a few years, you know, and that was hard and frustrating at times. One of the really nice things for the majority of the Magellan kids is having that support group of some of the friends that you made when you were in Magellan made that much more comfortable for the vast majority.
The one thing that we do with the kids, too, during their eighth grade year, we do a real intensive high school and college planning unit, and the kids leave Magellan with a pretty well laid out four-year individual plan, knowing that, yeah, things happen and you might have to make changes, but the teacher really helps them plan what it is they need to be taking when they get to high school. Yeah.
Can you speak to the advantage of being like a school within another school versus being a school separate? I mean, if you were going to start a charter school, are there advantages to being within other schools?
Instead of being a separate building?
Yeah, being a separate building.
One of the problems we would really have if we were in a separate building would be coming up with facilities for music, for art, for gym, for all of those kinds of facility needs that we would need. I mean, just logistic-wise. I also think it's really important for the gifted kids still to have interaction with non-gifted students and to learn the social skills on how to relate to people that are not exactly like yourself. You can become so easily separated and comfortable with this one group, and then in high school you're thrown into classes with an awful lot of people who haven't seen you for 6 years. And I think that making sure that they are comfortable in those settings is still really important, and that they learn the idea that people have different strengths, and that people are valuable no matter what kind of strengths or what kind of academic abilities they have.
There are several Appleton charter schools that do have their own facility and have chosen to do that. Because we're only four elementary classrooms, that's not a really large one, that it works really well to be within another school. That said, it works particularly well because the Odyssey and Magellan teachers have worked very hard to integrate themselves into the faculty and the community of the school. So they serve on committees, you know, so there isn't a we them kind of, you know, so it works very well, but that's due in great part, I think, to the teachers and their commitment to working together with the greater whole.
How does the Appleton District deal with the space issue and financial issue of having a charter school like this? In Madison, it's frequently said, there's no room to do it, or if we do it, it's going to take resources away from other kids.
Okay. Well, I know for Odyssey Magellan that as long as we have students, we have been told that we will operate, and we operate on the same dollar amount that every other school in Appleton gets. So we're not getting more, we're getting equal dollars. Now, if it's a standalone school, then they have their, you know, their own budget and what have you, separate and apart, and they do everything. With ours being within another school, there is the budget that attaches to Odyssey that goes to Highland School and is administered by the principal of Highlands, who's also the principal of Odyssey. And there is a percentage of those dollars pay Highlands for the use of the copier, you know, for the maintenance or whatever. So it's whatever the dollars are, it's a proportion. But we're getting the same and costing the district the same as any other school. But they determine what we're paying the host school. In terms of space, I mean, like I said, we started at the high school, then they moved us to the middle school, then fifth and sixth grade was at one school, third and fourth at one school. Now we have all four grades together. However, if Highlands grows in size, you know, we could be looking for another home. I'm hoping that won't happen, but it wasn't ideal. I mean, we would have loved to have 3 through 6 all together from the start. It didn't work out that way. So there have been other charters in Appleton that have worked that way. They've started out in a different facility and then had to move, but it seems to work. Yeah.
Given that the funding level is the same, mm-hmm. do you find it any more or less difficult to appropriately finance the program for gifted kids as opposed to the other kids in the district? You feel like you need more resources because they're or it works out just fine?
It seems to work out just fine. Now, that said, we do have a very active parent group that do, you know, heavy-duty fundraising, and so, I mean, we are very lucky in some of the extras, I think, that we, you know, that we've purchased with those fundraising dollars. But generally speaking, I think we're pretty pleased. There are some small items. For example, at the middle school, we use high school textbooks, and those high school textbooks are proportionately more expensive than middle school textbooks. You know, so in the year of a textbook adoption, we get the same dollar amount, but we may have to add some fundraising dollars in, you know, to help supplement. But no, it hasn't. I would say that the charter school planning and implementation dollars did help us get up and running and to basically outfit. For example, we outfitted our science room, and it's a well-equipped science room. So we had those dollars going in. But in terms of maintaining, I think without the fundraising, we would be okay too. Yeah.
Do you have any students?
We do, and our Board of Education loves that we're drawing in dollars from other districts. Yes, and in fact, I've had over the last couple of years more calls, and what I've actually found happening is because I have a good relationship with TAG coordinators in surrounding districts is if they have a student that they really feel would benefit and that they cannot meet the needs, they will say you might want to call Appleton. We have a student, for example, came to us from Kimberly who now, he's an eighth grader, chronologically a sixth grader, who walks up to West High School for AP Calculus every day. And Kimberly didn't feel that they were adequately going to be able to meet his needs, and they recommended that he come to us. So yeah, we do have kids that have opened and enrolled. We've also drawn kids from the parochial schools. So that's been a plus, yes.
In Madison, my experience and those of people that there seems to be some discouragement on the part of the teachers and principals to have their child evaluated. And for example, my daughter, for 3 years in a row, the teachers have said the exact same thing when I've approached them. She's right where she should be, she's happy, you know, she fits right in. No, don't test her. And then last year I did pretty much demand it, and she was several levels above. And this year I asked for a reassessment, and she's even higher, you know, three levels above. And so, and I have resources, and I can challenge her at home. But there are a lot of children in Madison who don't have the economic and sociological situations where they can be helped that way. And also nobody's going to call the tech department, and resources are really limited. So, you know, the tech department isn't going to go and able to find these kids. And I have seen children, minority children, who for a brief time would be in the same math group with my daughter, and then fall behind because, you know, or they transfer to a different school or whatever. And how do you get those kids in the school without, you know, they're not going to necessarily do well on an explore test. They may have great raw potential and motivation, and they need bootstraps, and how to get them in that school at a young age.
I think that's a problem nationally, not just locally or even statewide. Our statistics in terms of our minority and low socioeconomic status students at Odyssey Magellan are better than the other charter schools, but we do not reflect the growing diversity within the community. I think that is an issue. We do a couple of things. We do, and I'm not sure how much it's helped yet, but it may help over time. We do give all first grade students in the district a test called the Naglieri Nonverbal Ability Test, which purports to identify students, minority and non-traditional students. I'm not yet convinced that it's helping us find those kids, but you know, there are people who say that it should. So we are doing that. Again, we use the Measures of Academic Progress test. I'm not sure it's the perfect test either, but it is given to all kids twice or sometimes three times a year. So all kids are getting that. I'm not sure how you find some of those kids. I guess I can think of a couple of examples. There was a student in our initial Magellan class that was found by a conscientious teacher who said, "There's something about this kid. You need to look into him." And you know, truly, he was highly gifted. And you know, luckily, there was a caring teacher that discovered him. But it is a problem. And resources are declining. For example, in Appleton, we do not have access to the services of our school psychologist for any testing for gifted. So, I mean, that's a hard one. And we don't do it perfectly, but I don't think there's really any place in the country that isn't kind of struggling with that issue right now. We are looking at for next year, we're looking at a program that comes out of Duke University called Bright Ideas, and I've gotten the go-ahead from our superintendent to try to work with Duke University on replicating their data, which shows it's a method of programming for kindergarten, first, and second grade students that, in theory, closes the achievement gap, raises up all kids, and provides a rich curriculum for not only gifted kids, but for all kids, and then maximizes the chance that some of those minority kids will be identified gifted by third grade. They've had really good results, and I'm excited to think that we might be able to do something like that. But it's a real issue.
What percentage of the people who enroll their children or apply meet the criteria?
The application process is they fill out an intent to enroll form that gives their name, rank, and serial number if they qualify. So they don't apply if they don't qualify.
So you qualify first,
yeah.
Then you do.
Right.
Okay.
Right. So it really isn't applying.
Okay.
Yeah.
How do you mesh with the Appleton Virtual School?
There's two. There's the Wisconsin Connections Academy, which is the elementary K-8 school, and we don't do much in terms of that. But we also have our high school, the Appleton E-School, and we've had a number of kids, TAG kids and kids at Odyssey Magellan, that will take Appleton eSchool classes. I can think of several that have taken, for example, math classes, you know, or a civics class online so that they can move more quickly. And basically, the agreement we have there is if a TAG student applies, I have to sign off that it's appropriate, and then they can take those classes. So that's worked out really quite well for a number of kids.
Yeah. What happened in that first couple of years when the female enrollment went from 10% to 50%? What changed to make that happen?
You know, I'm not sure, but when we added fifth and sixth grade, the first class had fewer girls. Third and fourth, it had fewer girls. I don't know if it's social conditioning or, you know. I do know that at the younger ages, we probably have more boys identified, and I think part of that is girls are better able to camouflage their abilities and fit in and not, you know, not make waves. But I think part of it at that, when we first started, it was just, it was a real unique group of kids that signed on for that first year. I mean, basically, you know, sight unseen, they had to take my word for it that this was going to be a good program for them. And they were a very unique group of kids. Since that time, what we do when kids are considering the school is we say to the parents, you can come and visit if you want to, but that's, you know, that's your choice. But the student must come and spend half a day. And we line them up to shadow another student because we want the kids to see what it's going to be like. But, you know, like I say, that first group of kids, I called them my guinea pigs, and they said, no, we're your lab rats. So. And they were. But
I have a theory, but I have no idea how valid it is. And that is just from my experience with the third and fourth graders that I work with. It seems that a lot of the really highly gifted boys have a harder time fitting in. They socially, if they're not also athletically talented, especially, they're just, you know, a little bit more, they stick out a little bit more. A lot of the girls, it seems, if they're really highly gifted, many of them are very good at language. That's a huge generalization. It's not that I don't have girls that are very good at math. Of course I do. But if you're a really good reader, it's really easy for a teacher to say, here, I have another book that you could read that's at a higher level. It's very different to have a student who's really good in math. You can't just hand them a book and say, here, go ahead and study this level math instead. And so if you're a really good communicator, if you're a really good reader, if you're a really good speaker, you fit in better with your peers. And so I think a lot of the girls are really comfortable. They make really good friendships. They fit in really well with other people. And I think a lot of the boys find that harder to do. And so because it's a less comfortable fit for them in a regular classroom, I think they're more likely to have parents who agree that it might be worth taking the risk on trying this different place where the vast majority, I don't think I've ever had a student who didn't say coming to Odyssey was the best thing when it came to coming, finding friends. That's the thing they love about it the most. They will tell you they love the academic challenge, but everybody will say they absolutely love the fact that they found new friends here that understand them. And I think that's especially true for the boys.
And it makes sense because before this, the model that we had was just to accelerate kids into higher grade levels. And research would say that works. But it's not every student who wants to go off to college at age 15 or 16. And if we can keep them with their age mates but appropriately challenge them, it makes sense that the friendship piece, you know, they're more likely to find friends who are like them within that are their same age. Yeah.
What do you say when other teachers and educators would argue that there's really not a need for what you're doing? That a good teacher can differentiate within the classroom and then serve the kids at the high level, the middle level, and the lower level. And in fact, by removing the kids at the higher level, you're actually worsening the classroom environment for the other groups of kids.
I did have a teacher say, well, if you take those, you know, I use those kids you know, to bring up the level for all my kids. And I said, it's not okay to use children. We're here to, you know, to teach children. You know, I do think that good teachers can differentiate, but I think it's very, very difficult in the broadening diversity within all classrooms. I'm not sure it's a doable job for one teacher to differentiate. I find the teachers who are the best at differentiating and providing for the needs of these students are the ones who are constantly wanting more help and constantly feeling like they want to do more. It's the teachers who don't get it at all that I, you know, that I worry the most about. And after 22 years, I don't necessarily have a good answer, but I find it discouraging that I'm still having to make the same arguments after 22 years, that there are needs and they do need them. But
when I talk to colleagues or parents who aren't involved with gifted kids and try to understand me, a lot of people, when I tell them I'm a gifted teacher, they think, oh, you have a class of little angels who are all sitting at their desks going, I can't wait to learn something new today, Mrs. Witzling, go and teach. And so when I try to describe a little more about really the challenges that are involved in being a gifted teacher, and why I think it's really important for those students to be in my classroom, I ask people to imagine their own child, if they have one. And imagine when they were in fifth grade, for example. Imagine their fifth grader, that their fifth grade teacher had decided instead to teach third grade curriculum for that year. That she felt that the third grade curriculum was exactly what the students needed, and that the school district was rushing everybody too much. How would you feel about your student being given third grade curriculum when they're fifth graders? And everybody would say, that's ridiculous. You know, why would they do that? I mean, my child would be ready for fifth grade curriculum. Of course, she should be getting fifth grade curriculum. Well, that's how it is for a gifted child. A gifted child is in fifth grade. They're getting fifth grade curriculum, but they're ready for seventh grade curriculum or eighth grade curriculum. So why would you think that the best place for that child to be is necessarily going to be where they're getting the curriculum that's given to everybody who's the same age, you know, and that
have a broad range of gifted kids who have needs that need to be met too. And those are the students that, for the most part, are needing to have their needs met in differentiated classrooms. And some of those differentiated classrooms work very well, and some don't.
Yeah.
Thinking about parents who want to try and get a school started like that in another community, what are the biggest hurdles to overcome, or, you know, how do we get over some of the hurdles that we know are going to be there? I mean, you heard some of it just in Mark's question about this attitude about how these kids don't need anything special beyond what's in the regular classroom. And, the issue about money is always another issue in space. And,
well, we had a real advantage in Appleton because we had a superintendent that was very supportive of charter schools and understood gifted programming. And you need to convince leadership of the need for gifted programming if that's not there. Because without that understanding, it becomes, I think, extremely difficult, if not impossible, you know, to do it. On the other hand, I can tell you from past experience in Appleton, when we had a superintendent who was not at all supportive of gifted education, parents made the difference, and gifted education remained in Appleton because parents went to board meetings and parents demanded things, you know. So never underestimate the power of a strong vocal group of parents, if you can, you know, but you do have to educate as you go along. But if you have a strong group, I do think you can go somewhere. I had a friend who was a strong vocal parent who then got a job in the school district, and I remember hearing her say to the superintendent, "How come you listened to me when I was just a parent? Now I'm a teacher, and you don't pay as much attention." But so parents do wield some power. But
the other thing I would add is do your research. because I think the more that you can confront those ideas with facts, with research, with data, the more seriously people are going to take you. I know that being a gifted parent, a lot of times the argument or the view that people have of you is that you're elitist and you're just trying to push your kid too fast, and it's because, you know, you want to try and get your kid into the best school, and it's all, you know, in your own head kind of a thing. You need to be able to show the people who don't have experience with gifted kids or with the value of that kind of program why it's important, and most of the time I think those people will be most willing to listen to you if you're approaching it humbly to some extent, okay? Because you can't come off as being like completely pushy. You have to be doing what I say because this is the best thing for my kid. But it's got to be, you know, it's not just my kid. This is true about, you know, kids all over the country. And here's data from this place, and here's some data from that place. And, you know, the book about acceleration.
Yeah, the Templeton Report on Acceleration is a good place, I think, to start. And if you don't want, and acceleration works, but if you don't want just to be able to accelerate kids but to keep them with their age mates, they do need a peer group. I think I'd start with that.
When Jan Davidson was with us a couple of years ago, she used the phrase, you have to be pleasantly persistent. Mm-hmm. That's the phrase that she used more than once that evening. I obviously don't want that. This actually
she came to Appleton too, and she came to Appleton, and I think probably here free of charge. She paid to come, and she spoke to a large group, and every single one of our board members went to that meeting. We invited them to a reception. We invited them to a reception beforehand to meet her, and now one of them slept through it, but they were all there.
You had better turnout than we got.
Yeah. Wow.
We had the two who I think probably not. Online up for re-election that year come for a few minutes and make sure that I saw them. But this is probably a perfect juncture to give Nancy Donahue a chance to say a few words about whatever the performance and achievement committee discussed last week when it discussed school options, as well as an opportunity to, I don't know, Stan, if you wanted to add anything to the mix here, or if people in the audience have any questions for either Nancy when she gets a chance.
Okay, I don't have anything formal, and Stan, since you don't have to look back my head. The format of the meeting, was anyone there else there? Okay, it was a pretty small group in the audience. The format of the meeting was Art Rainwater did a PowerPoint presentation running through the different models of schools or the different types of governments or school structures, primarily charter schools, magnet schools, alternative schools, and specialty schools. And the biggest difference between a charter school and those other three is that the charter school has a contract with someone outside of the district administration and outside of the school board and the district. So it's a contract between two parties. The rest are all internal. And when he did the PowerPoint presentation, it was really very informative. I mean, he did a nice job of covering. There was a little bit of a spin on it, but not as much as I would have anticipated. One of the things he said that I was very impressed with, and we're jumping ahead to afterwards, Lori Cupsa is the chair of the Performance and Achievement Committee, and she had two charts set up, one for themes that everyone agreed on, agreements, and then issues to be discussed later, which they never got to that point. But one of the points Art made that not a big Art advocate, but he did say, when the board was tossing around, well, what about this issue, what about that issue, he said, well, here's what you have to do as a board, and it's been a few days, and I may not be saying it exactly, but you need to look at what the vision is for the district and then work from that, which I thought was a really on-target comment to make. And the other thing, too, was even though he had his spin and everyone kind of knows what Art's thinking is, I felt it was turning it over to the board, you come up with a vision, and then you go forward with that. Because what a lot of the discussion ended up being was the typical, which was at the HOPE meeting. Well, what about this problem? Well, what about this expense? Well, a lot of people want to stay in their neighborhoods, and how can you do that? And so there was a lot of, let's focus on the barriers instead of the benefits, which seems to be a pretty typical approach. So that's kind of the downside of it. But I think as long as people are continuing to bring up these issues to the school board and groups of parents show up at these meetings, and oddly enough, when I showed up, they, oh, you don't have to come to these meetings. You can watch us on TV. And as it happened, there was a Cap Times reporter and a Wisconsin State Journal reporter there, and they actually came up to Lauren and myself afterwards asking questions. Had we not been there, we wouldn't have been able to have any kind of input, and that article's coming out tomorrow in the Wisconsin State Journal. So I think going to the meetings, having a representative at meetings, just in case an opportunity comes up. There wasn't an opportunity for public statements at this meeting because it was considered a workshop, but I think the future meetings of the Performance and Achievement Committee will have public time for public input so that people can just say, well, consider this as you go into your discussion. But I'm sure the thing tomorrow, the article tomorrow, do you know about that article that's coming out? Is that primarily a focus on charter schools?
Yeah.
So I'll be interested to see what gets in that. Any questions?
Thanks.
Did you
want to think so? Yeah. I just had a couple comments on what's intended by charter creation of a charter school. And what I mean by that is, kind of references the answer mentioned, that charter schools are public schools, they're schools of choice, and outside of Milwaukee, if you've seen, they're authorized by school districts, so you're not going to have a charter school here unless the school board okays it. And they have okayed in the past two of them, including this one right here, Wright Middle School is one of the charter schools that been in existence the longest. It's really the newest one, Nuestro Mundo, I think is more typical of what's intended, more how that was created and how it exists today is more typical of what's intended by the charter idea. What I mean by that is it was a group of parents and educators that came forward, started to plan that school from scratch. That's different than how traditional schools are created usually. They cleared the tables, they were talking about creating an early child or elementary school, a language immersion, Spanish, English, and they spent a couple of years planning that charter school. And then as that planning kind of coalesced and they were ready to bring it to the school board, they did just that. They brought the proposal for the Nuestro Mundo charter school to the board, and despite the superintendent's opposition, had enough support on the board for the board to authorize that school. And when the school board authorizes, we're up to state, when the Madison School Board authorized that school, they voted to enter into a contract with Nuestro Mundo,
Inc.
Nuestro Mundo Incorporated, because the governing board of Nuestro Mundo had created a nonprofit entity to represent that charter school. It incorporated, applied for 501c3, which exists today. So Nuestro Mundo, unlike Wright, there's a contract between the school board and Nuestro Mundo, Inc., which is the governing body that is responsible, represents the charter school for operating the charter school through the contract. And what the charter law in the state allows, and it's common throughout the 40 states of charter laws, is to, I think the idea is that there'll be more school site-based autonomy with a charter school. There's more freedom to innovate. Our state law, and the book I handed out, I have a couple extra copies, the state law is described in the back, Appendix D. It's Section 11840 of the law. And the very last sentence of that law, over on page 116, says, except as otherwise explicitly provided, all of the requirements that apply to traditional schools in our state law, our school code, chapters 115 through 121, do not apply. So there's broad flexibility, that's what's intended, for the planners of these charter schools to innovate and do things differently and to have freedom from many, not all, many of the requirements that apply to traditional schools. The other flexibility that's provided is with licensure. I was going to ask the people from Appleton. Appendix A describes the DPI administrative rule relating to teacher licensure. Teachers need to be licensed in a charter school, but they can apply for a charter license on top of the regular license that allows them to teach out of field.
That's okay, what I have. I'm actually secondary certified. Okay. I'm certified broadfield science and physics.
So that's been an important kind of flexibility, and it's a rule that was adopted years ago by, it's an administrative rule in the DPI that was adopted when John Benson was state superintendent. And it, I think there, when I checked a couple of years ago, there were 200-300 of those licenses issued. So they're quite common and it gives that flexibility to it. So that kind of in a nutshell is kind of more describes the what's intended by a charter school. And you probably, some of you may have seen the article in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel yesterday describing a story about the fact that in this current cycle of awarding grants to applicants for either planning a charter school or implementing the first or second year, the DPI, based on strong recommendations from the federal government, which provides the money from the U.S. Department of U.S. Department of Education, denied many of the applications because the U.S. Department that provides the money was saying in that application there wasn't enough site-based autonomy and accountability. There wasn't a nonprofit entity, a legal entity representing the school in place in that application. So they denied or didn't award the grant and said, come back to the drawing board and rework it and come back to this negative. So that just briefly talks about the intent, what's intended by a charter school. That's important.
There's a similar article in the Cap Times tonight, actually, about the current cycle of proposals. Nancy, I wanted to ask you, do you know when the Performance and Achievement Committee is next meeting? And what is its plan for this ongoing conversation?
Well, they didn't get to that. That was the issues to be addressed, didn't get to that.
Uh-huh.
I believe it's not going to be, I don't know.
Okay.
Look online.
So you can check online the school district website and the calendar for the Board of Education.
Yeah.
Any other questions for, Jane?
Did you have any trouble with the teachers union in Appleton about charter school?
No, all the teachers in Appleton's charter schools are members of the teachers.
But there wasn't any pushback from the leadership of the union about wanting teachers.
No, I would say that one of the first charter schools was our classical charter school, which is a core knowledge school, and that was a group of parents that worked together to come up with a plan for that charter school. And there was some animosity, I think, between the teachers and the charter school, because the implication was, you know, okay, we're not doing it well enough, so you have to go out and get a charter school. And they've had to work very hard, I think, to get rid of that animosity. Most of the other charter schools in Appleton have come from teachers, educators, you know, sometimes working in conjunction. And for our charter school, we had parents on the committee, but it was teachers and administrators, and there hasn't been that animosity, but there was some at the beginning.
How about community acceptance?
Yeah. It's a good question, and I've often comments following up on what you said. I knew the superintendent very, very well because he was president of the State Charter School Association, and got to know Tom Scala and what was happening in Appleton. And I would describe that to add on to what you just said, and that is, I think Appleton School Board and the leadership that they have, the very positive leadership that they have, 5-6 years ago, looked at how the world was changing, how public education was becoming more of a choice system, and through open enrollment, post-secondary options, and so forth, and looked at the opportunity to create, recognize that the traditional schools were doing very, very well, but they served most of the youngsters very well, but they didn't serve every youngster very well, and they said this publicly, that they were going to make every effort to serve every Sunsville youngster that they're responsible for. And the best way to do that was providing more of these choices, which they now have 14 of these charter schools. But I think they also recognize that public education was changing, and financially, it was better to position the school district to create these choices, like we heard earlier. People open enrolling to Appleton, people staying in Appleton, new families coming, residing in Appleton. And for the board and leadership, it was like a strategic policy decision. It was a smart decision to make. And a growing number of other districts around the state are doing that. You find where several years in Sheboygan didn't have any charter schools, and they were behind in Appleton and kind of doing charter. A year ago or so, they had one fell swoop. Seven of them, right? And they have several charter schools now, Waukesha, Oshkosh, and a growing number of largest and small districts are embracing chartering. It's just a delivery system option, but they're making a smart decision. We had a conference up at Appleton a couple years ago, and the president of the teachers was our state charter conference, was on our planning committee, and they came to recognize that this was good for kids, good for the district, both programmatically and financially, and it was good for teachers. I talked to my husband on the phone the other day, I'm a board member, a board president, and his wife is gone, so we just got talking. He said, Sam, you know, one of the neatest things that's happened here, one of the most positive impacts, it has energized teachers in our district, that when they know if they have a good idea, most of these new latest charter schools have been the dream and the vision of veteran teachers. And they know they can come forward to the board administration, and there's a receptive audience, quite a receptive group. So the union, I think, is recognized, thanks to Kevin Rupert, who are educated, with education or greater, very good. Just very good stories about Postgres over the years about what charters are dispelling a lot of misconception. So it's going to happen. It's going to happen here in Madison. It's just a matter of how.
it does sound like the question of leadership is key. And, of course, we are at a point in our history in this district. We're choosing a new superintendent. But I think that will, it takes us back to the beginning of this meeting, actually, the question of how many charter schools will our district have in 5 years. It will depend on who we hire as our next superintendent, I think, and what their values are in this area and what their own worldview is. So, but the various things you were just saying, we heard that at the HOPE meeting a couple of weeks ago, exactly the same points, the re-energizing of the teachers, et cetera, that happened down in Verona when they opened up several charter schools within a 2 or 3 year span. It's really exciting to hear about. I started to ask before about public resistance, community resistance. I don't know much about Appleton, and actually I've been wanting to ask you, how many students do you have in your district?
About about 1,000 per grade level.
1,000 per grade level?
1,000 first graders.
Okay,
yeah,
so you're significantly smaller than we are. But what about community resistance or support, just generally? Did you encounter any ugliness along the way?
We didn't.
That it was so politically incorrect that there was a resistance movement.
No, not per se. And I do think, along with the teachers, you know, seeing this as a good thing, I think the community and parents in particular see it as having options. And the reality of it is most kids go to their neighborhood school, and most, feel that their child is getting the kind of good education that they want. But by providing the different charter options, I think it has opened them. So, no, I don't know.
And nothing
know
special
exactly
about
what
this, this specific
about.
Charter, I guess.
Yeah,
is what
this
I
one,
it's good news.
Yeah.
No. No.
I know what you're talking about because I taught in Verona back in the 90s when the Cornell Charter School first started, and I think that was very stressful and very difficult for the entire community. It was very divisive, a lot of stuff, because of politics happening in the school board. A lot of things were really difficult. I really think that the thing that probably made it go very well in Appleton, I wasn't there when it started, but really was the positive leadership. It really sets a tone for the community. You know, if you can have your superintendent stand up and say, you know, we're doing our best to reach everybody, and I think we do a really great job, and I'm really proud of what we do, but you know, we could do better, and these are some of our ideas for what we'd like to do. You know, you're willing to listen to a person like that and say, that sounds reasonable.
We had some ugly community and parent situations with the prior superintendent just in terms of tag programming, but not in terms of this charter.
Very good.
Just one quick thing.
The
education writer at Post Crescent, Kathy Newper, she over the several years just done wonderful work in terms of writing stories about the charter schools.
Yes. This is Jennifer. Jennifer Edmondson, is that her name?
Kathy.
Yeah, I say that because I think the ISPAS here in Madison has done the same thing.
This is not a platform.
It takes that over a period of time just to educate. This is new. Yeah. It's new for a lot of people still.
Yeah,
we're in the early stages of all this, but I compliment you because you've done the same thing here.
Jennifer Edmondson is a parent.
Okay,
and she was
I got the names.
Well, she did a column in the Post Crescent for a while.
Oh, okay, that's what I'm thinking.
Kathy Newfer is one of those unique newspaper writers where, if you want to talk to her off the record, it's always off the record. And if she quotes you in the paper and you sound stupid, it's because you sounded stupid, because it's always 100% accurate. But she's very, very supportive of education and really gets the word out, I think, very well.
Well, it's almost 9:15. Thank you so much
for
taking
everyone.
The time to come down. We really appreciate it. Sen and Nancy. And thanks to all of you for coming. Please grab a handful of Halloween candy.